the campus, but we're going to co-locate that attorney with the domestic violence reduction unit. I think it makes more sense for them to be with the police, but we'll have really good coordination because of the DA staff person that will be in our building. This person will also help folks understand what to expect from the prosecution process and what victim rights can flow from participation in that process. Volunteers of America Home Free, I said, would be there. I didn't talk before, and I want to make sure and not miss the role of the navigators. Navigators are advocates. They're hired and trained by nonprofit, community-based domestic violence service providers. These are the folks in our community who have the most expertise in serving victims of domestic violence and doing really sound victim-centered work. We will have navigators from a variety of domestic violence service providers in our community, including a whole handful of our culturally specific domestic violence service providers in our community. So, for instance, we might have somebody from Russian Oregon Social Services there 2 full days a week, and they've said that their folks will learn and understand if you have somebody there all day Monday, all day Wednesday, we'll know. And that's when we'll come and access services. So we're really working hard to build a center that will be welcoming and open to some of our traditionally underserved populations. The navigators, of course, do safety and crisis planning, restraining order assistance, things like that. But their real charge is to help a participant understand the entire range and wealth of options and resources that they might be able to access. And then to help make the connections with those services, again, both the ones in our center, on our campus, and throughout our city will be invited to come and serve folks in our building. I'm basically done today, but we do have a good accountability system set up. I will work with an advisory council, a multidisciplinary advisory council that will be in charge of helping design a comprehensive evaluation plan. We will collect information, data, evaluate the center, bring that information back here for your consideration in the future, and that's a component of the intergovernmental agreement that you're considering today. So thanks again for your time. Oh, and we're on track to open in February, March.
Yay. Yay.
Thank you. Commissioner Kogan.
Thank you. Good morning, Mayor Adams, members of council. I'm Jeff Kogan from Multnomah County Commission. I wanted to briefly address the resolution about Domestic Violence Awareness Month and then talk about the Gateway Center. This resolution establishing Domestic Violence Awareness Month is the type that can sometimes be dismissed as merely symbolic. And perhaps in times that there is, sometimes that may be right. But in this case, I really think it's important that we make symbolic gestures like this. Commissioner Saltzman did a good job, I think, of explaining how broad this problem is. One of the real problems with domestic violence is an awful lot of domestic violence doesn't get reported and the victim does not seek services. And there's a lot of reasons for that, one of which is it wasn't that long ago that it was something that wasn't discussed in polite company. There's a tremendous stigma still attached with domestic violence. And there's also a lack of awareness about what services are available. And by the city and the county jointly promoting this awareness month, I think we're helping to overcome that and to raise awareness about both the problem, which hopefully will help generate additional services, but also the opportunities that are there for help. And that's, I think, significant. Having said that, I'm also really glad that we're not merely here on a symbolic gesture and that instead we're doing something very tangible to address this problem. And Martha did a great job of talking about what the Gateway Center does. What I'd like to just focus on is how the partnership that has come together around the Gateway Center is really a wonderful model for the community and is a really terrific example of the sum being greater than the parts. Simply put, none of us in this environment would have been able to put this together alone. And together, working together with the city, the federal government, the State Department of Human Services, the county, these nonprofits like Volunteers of America, Legal Aid, we've been able to come together and make something truly significant happen. This collaboration really began after this council provided the resources to do a feasibility study to make sure that this idea was a good idea. And in pulling the feasibility study together, Commissioner Saltzman made sure to bring a broad array of members of the community together. And we did focus groups, and we really brought people together to make sure that this wasn't something being imposed on folks, but was actually something that was needed. And then once we got the understanding that, yes, this is a good idea, the implementation has truly been collaborative and has truly been drawing together all members of the community who are involved in this. Multnomah County is really happy to be able to be partnering with this, both by providing the facility, the physical facility, as well as having our domestic violence program coordinator, our family violence coordinating council, be actively engaged in the process, and as you'll hear, the district attorney's office as well. I just want to say that it's a tremendous collaboration, but it's one that really couldn't have happened without singular leadership, and that's what Dan Saltzman provided here, and we're all lucky that he took this idea and steadfastly pursued it so that today we can be getting to something tangible. Thank you very much for your partnership.
Thanks, Commissioner.
Morning, Mayor and City Commissioners. My name is Rod Underhill. I'm a Chief Deputy District Attorney in Mr. Shrunk's office. I am one of the individuals who has responded to a number of your crime scenes throughout your community over the last two decades. And when I talk about crime scenes, the ones that leave the most and biggest imprint on me are the murders, many of which have been domestic violence. During the decade of the 1990s, for the most part, I supervised the domestic violence unit in Multnomah County. And during that decade, I responded to a number of those kind of crime scenes that I've described. The conversations that we would have at those crime scenes with detectives dealt with collaboration and working together for a single effort and desire, and that was to catch the bad guy and bring that person to justice. We did okay at that. When the dust would settle and we would move on from that crime scene onto another matter, we would often talk about what were the gaps. What were the gaps in our system, in our community, that made it such that maybe this happened? Over time, the Fatality Review Committee has been formed, a statewide committee that reviews domestic violence fatalities with just that goal and desire. It works toward trying to find out what can we do to make it so that we don't have people respond to those crime scenes and go through that process. Well, this was one of the things that was talked about in the 1990s. We didn't have a name for it. We didn't label it the Domestic Violence One Stop or the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services. But we talked about the concept. And in the 1990s, it was really but a dream. It truly was. It wasn't for lack of energy or desire or motivation, but it was for a lack of resources. We had the idea, we had the people and the interest, but we just didn't have the resource available. The motivation of your predecessors, people that have sat in your chairs, have been great. The formation of the Domestic Violence Reduction Unit with the Portland Police Bureau. Your district attorney in the early 90s put together the unit that I summarized and supervised for that decade. Members of the bench have gone to the forefront, have taken a lead role, judges such as Judge Harrell and others, a lead role in our community to show how important domestic violence is and that a concerted, united effort by a community to address the problem is necessary. But we always did have a gap. This closes that gap in large part. The prosecutors, and I'll be the first to admit it, we oftentimes myopically look at the crime scene as the thing to address, but we often forget how to not have that happen. This is that effort. The district attorney's office is extremely excited, as are everybody in the domestic violence community, to see this occur because although I'll never be able to tell you or anyone how many of those crime scenes we wouldn't have had to go to if we had this in our community decades ago, never be able to tell you. But with a fair degree of certainty, I can tell you there were some and there will be in the future. We will be able to now interface with direct service advocates, we being the district attorney's office and law enforcement. We do it now, but we don't do it really well, and this will help with that. This is a tremendous effort. It is a milestone in this community to see this come for those people who have been fighting this fight and working hard for this for a very long time. Thank you.
Thanks, Rod. Terry, if you can scoot closer to the microphone, too, maybe.
Well, I kind of have a loud voice, so I think we'll be okay. my name is Terry Doyle, and good morning, and thank you for having me here. I am actually a survivor of domestic violence, so my voice might crack a time or two, but we're working on that. I have been fortunate enough to be part of the One Stop Task Force, and I was asked to speak about what would have or could have been different for myself had such a place as a center existed. And this is what I have come up with. Knowing about the Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services would have given me a safe, non-judging place to learn about resources and support services, and that, that are available to victims and survivors. The center would have been able to give me much needed, informed, accurate information and choices to help me through my process. The center would have let me know that my emotions, fears, and confusion were normal. But most of all, the center would have let me know I was not alone. Excuse me.
Okay. Take your time.
Woo. And knowing just the few things that I had just mentioned, the center could have assisted me in finding shelter, motel vouchers, or an agency that could have assisted me with moving costs to relocate. I had a high-paying job. Just no money is available, as many women who live with abusive partners deal with. The center could have informed me that the Humane Society has a program for survivors of domestic violence, and they will short-term house your pets at no charge. They even let you visit as often as you want. I was not going to leave without my 10-year-old dog. She was all I had. The center could have assisted me in finding support groups or counseling that could have given me the strength to not stay or continue returning. The center could have provided me with an advocate to attend court hearings and contestings, which no one should have to do alone. Working with the center and the DVRU would have helped me through my fear of the police and probably given me the strength to report ongoing abuse and restraining order violations. These are just a few of the differences the centers would have and could have done for me. Just knowing about the center and being able to participate on the task force has already changed my life. The center has given me immeasurable strength and confidence, and the center has truly been a gateway of change and healing. I am currently a volunteer/intern at the West Women and Children's Shelter for Domestic Violence for 12 months to become a domestic violence advocate. And again, because of my participation and the passion of the entire task force, I work with survivors daily, and often we discuss the center, and the feedback is of excitement and astonishment. For these women to hear the city and county of Portland truly cares gives them validation and the hope that they so much need. Words cannot express my gratitude for all of your time, financial support, and true concern for such a worthy cause. The Gateway Center for Domestic Violence Services is already changing lives.
Thanks, sir. Our last panel is Doug Gray from the Multnomah County Courts, Sergeant Greg Stewart, the Portland Police Bureau, Chris Bilhart with Volunteers of America, and Tana Sanchez with Native American Youth Association.
Welcome to City Council.
Doug? You want
to... Good morning, Mr. Mayor and members of the council. My name is Doug Gray. I am the Administrator for the Circuit Court of the State of Oregon for Multnomah County. But for timing of this presentation, you would have had Judge Jean Maurer here, who's our presiding judge, but she could not be here due to the Oregon Judicial Conference, which is meeting these 2 days in Salem. I want to start off and just talk about a little bit about the history. Rod Underhill addressed some of that, but I do want to emphasize that since the late 80s, the Circuit Court of Multnomah County has been an intimate partner with all of the community resources in terms of addressing the problem of domestic violence. It started with Judge Stephen B. Harrell, Judge Marie McKnight, Judge Dale Kosh, Judge Nan Waller, and now with Presiding Judge Gene Maurer. All the judges and the referees of the court are committed to helping and working on this problem. The court possesses a unique role in that it is the gateway to obtaining the powers of the state to protect a person through the granting of a Family Abuse Prevention Act restraining order, which then allows the Portland Police Bureau and other law enforcement agencies to enforce that restraining order and keep the person safe. The Gateway Center will provide a safe, secure, immediate environment for victims of domestic violence. It will provide them with a virtual courtroom and advanced technology to actually obtain the restraining order without ever having to come downtown to the courthouse. And it will greatly improve the process by which we are able to serve the public in this area, because we'll be able to serve a great deal of the public from the East County area. The location of the center is ideal, and we will be able to better serve the people who do come downtown to the courthouse. So the center is a great step in the right direction, and we greatly appreciate all of your support in establishing it.
Thank you.
Sergeant Stewart.
Hello, my name is Greg Stewart. I'm a sergeant with the Portland Police Bureau, formerly the Domestic Violence Unit, and currently of the Criminal Analysis Unit. Because of, I guess, my position both as a former DV sergeant and now in charge of crime analysis, I'm in a unique position to gauge the scope of this problem. If I was to appear before this council and tell the council that there was an identifiable group who committed approximately half of all assaults in the city of Portland, 30% of all aggravated assaults, and a quarter of all homicides, and if that group continued to operate year over year for more than the last decade, be it a group of drug users like methamphetamine or an identifiable gang, this council would pass resolution after resolution to address that group. I'm here to tell you today that group exists, and that group is domestic violence offenders. Because of the nature of domestic violence, it's a very difficult group for the police to address. Obviously, they don't organize together, so a lot of our tools at fracturing their organizations don't work. Because of the relationship between them and the survivors of domestic violence, frequently they don't, the services we offer the victims of crime are not adequate for their needs. Most of our victim services are based around the idea that the offender and the victim are not known to each other, or that the offender will not have this kind of repeat access to the victims. I think we all ought to commend Ms. Doyle for her bravery in coming up here and speaking to what the survivors of these situations need. And I'd like not just the counselors, but everyone in this room to think about what she said and the types of problems she talked about needing to overcome. And what Ms. Doyle needed and what I heard when she was speaking was that she needed options. She had problems, and she felt by herself, and most likely was, because domestic violent offenders operate in that manner. They try to isolate the people they victimize. So the victims don't have options, or if they have options, they're frequently unaware that those options even exist. And I think that's what the Gateway Center is about. It's about providing a space where people in this situation can go to explore options. Again, as the supervisor of that unit, I can tell you that we will never address domestic violence until we provide the people who are having those crimes perpetrated against them the options to leave. And I guess on parting, and this is what I tell new officers to come into the unit, I'd ask you to put yourself in the position of someone being victimized like this, who is either dependent on their abuser for housing and clothing their children, or worked themselves and made money that the abuser then took, and to leave would place them and their children homeless and without food. And I guess the reason I use that analogy is it's not as simple as just leaving. If we as a community can provide folks the options they need to leave, the police bureau, I promise you, can do a much better job holding accountable the people who commit these crimes. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. Chris?
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. This is a very exciting day. I wanted to talk for just a minute about the services for children that we're going to be having at the Gateway Center, and start by telling you that statistics tell us that in 2/3 of the households where domestic violence is occurring, there are children in those households, many times young children. And kids are affected by what they live with in these households in many different ways. Many of them witness the violence on a frequent basis. Some of them are injured themselves when they try to intervene and protect the targeted parent. We also know that in 10% of the cases when 911 is called, it's a child who's placing that call. So they're very much involved in what's going on in the household, and then the atmosphere in those homes affects them in many ways as well, emotionally, developmentally, et cetera. So I'm really pleased to be able to give you, expand just a little bit on what Martha talked about earlier, a quick and dirty summary of some of the services that are going to be available in the Gateway Center. And as she also mentioned, in large part, there, thanks to the Portland Children's Levy funds, there's a significant investment on the part of the Portland Children's Levy that is really allowing a lot of these services to be made available at the Gateway Center. So at the center, we will have on-site services, and we'll also have it will also serve as kind of a home base for some of the services that will happen in the form of home visiting and school-based services. And these will include on-site domestic violence and trauma-informed child care, so that children who come with their parents to the center can have a safe and fun place to play, but we'll also have teachers in that child care center who are very aware of the impacts of domestic violence on children and can be very tuned into issues that might manifest while they're in their care. We'll also have one-on-one and group advocacy and support for young children. Some of those will be fairly structured groups with curriculums, the curriculum called Safe Spaces that takes a child through their experience living in a household where DV is occurring and walking them through some basic things, how to make a safety plan. The fact of not it being advisable to intervene if violence is going on in their home, the fact that it's not their fault, and how to express and deal with their emotions. They may not have had a very good role model for how to express emotions, and building social skills as well. One-on-one support will also be available for children, and as I mentioned, that can happen in the center as well as during home visits or out in the community. There will also be kind of companion services for teens. Teens are sometimes kind of left out of our focus on children, unfortunately, because they're older and can fend for themselves a little bit more. But they're a population that really needs a lot of focus and support. Not only are they beginning to experience dating relationships where domestic violence or dynamics of power and control might be manifesting, but they may have lived in homes where domestic violence was occurring. So at the center, there is going to be a teen support room, and I'm collecting suggestions for what we're going to call it, because we want it to be someplace that kids feel good about going to because it's got a great name. So let me know if you come up with anything. But it'll be a place where kids can come and hang out and get support, and there will be teen advocates for them to interact with. We'll also have teen support groups. Some of those will also happen in school-based settings, empowerment groups for girls, one-on-one advocacy that can happen in a coffee shop or it can happen at the center. And so we're really going to try to attend to that population well through the Gateway Center. Parents need a lot of support in learning more about how domestic violence may have affected their children and affected their parenting. So we're going to have parenting support services as well, and that can be one-on-one as well as in group settings. And as Martha also mentioned, there are several partners in providing these children's services. I'm from Volunteers of America, Home Free, but we're also going to have the Portland Children's Relief Nursery involved, Listen to Kids, El Programa, Proyecto Unica, Salvation Army West Women's, and all of those agencies will be contributing to services that can happen for children and give them the support that they need and the information that they need. So I'll sum up by saying we are very excited about this step today, and we can't wait to move in.
Hannah Sanchez, Director of Family Services, Native American Youth and Family Center. And Ian, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
I think one of the things I just want to just briefly touch on is that the questions that came up sort of originally when we started this idea, is this going to be an overlap in services? Are those culturally specific programs going to be represented? Is this going to be important to them? And it is extremely important to us. And I think that one of the things that, you know, in my conversations with other people working in the field and in specifically culturally specific programs, is that sometimes our communities are really, really small. And they're large, but they're small in that people know people. And the opportunity to go someplace else where maybe you don't have to walk into the center where everybody knows your name, or they know that you're related to somebody, or, you know, it's just an amazing thing. We've had it happen many times in our agency. We've supported victims from Somalia and victims who are from South America because they don't want to go to those agencies because they know people. They're, you know, it's a difficult thing to do, and this offers such an amazing opportunity for us to not only be involved and have our own advocates there as well, but to just be supportive of people who feel like they want to deal with their issues, but they don't want to have it in front of everyone, because we all know that that's a major issue of domestic violence, is that people have to hide because there's shame involved, because there's issues around their community and whether the community can support them in different ways. And so this is offering just such an amazing opportunity for us. It's also offered an opportunity for us to have a support group on the east side, which will be really important for our community. We have a large community on the east side of the Portland metro area and then beyond in the county. And this will make it easier for our clients to get to a different support group area. So we're very excited about that. And just listening to what everyone else had to say, I was like, oh, well, I'm not going to have anything to say, but that's good. Because they talked about some of the really most important things, is just the access and the opportunity, the option, and the things that will just make such a huge difference to have this center. And we're just so very excited about it. And yes, we want to move in tomorrow. Can we get this work done? But anyway, thanks so much for this opportunity. Really, really appreciate it. It's going to be wonderful, I think.
Thank you all. Thank you.
That completes our invited.
Is anyone signed up to testify, Carla?
We have two more people. I believe it's Eric or Erica Green and Tina Perry. Please come on up.
Good morning. Welcome to the City Council. We're glad you're here. You can scooch as close to those microphones as possible. That would be great.
Hi, my name is Tina Perry, and I am a victim of domestic violence. And I think that this thing that they're doing with the program for women is really good. But I also think that when the women get into this program, if we could somehow, like, maybe pay half, like if we get SSI or SSD or food stamps, that we could give them half to help them out for us to stay there and stuff. And I think maybe that when a woman is domestically violated, that the law also should be enforced a little bit harder. So that's just pretty much all I have to say about it.
Well, very well said. Thanks for your testimony.
Thank you.
Good morning. My name is, like you guys already said, my name is Eric. I'm really nervous. I'm really excited about the program. I am always used to preach to women about domestic violence at Rose Haven, and here I am a client person of domestic violence, and it's always when I went to get help, there was nothing for single women. It was always women with children, even my mother, but my mother had my children. I am, everywhere I went, it was always, no, we can't help you because, you know, I have these children, and I do have children, so I was always closed. I never told anybody about what was going on. Now here I am. Not expecting to hear this today while I'm here. I'm so, so excited about the program that you guys are opening up, and I would love to be a part of what's going on. And I'm taking steps today to work on this domestic violence issue. Actually, I'm going to go today and possibly get a restraining order on the person that I'm with because I'm tired of being in the situation that I am in. I'm changing my life today. I just thank you guys for getting this program started up, and hopefully, God will bless it, will be open soon, and I can be able to be a part of it and get some help.
Thank you for your testimony and for coming today.
Mr. Mayor, before we vote, and because many of the implementation task force members are shy people, I'd like to have them stand and as I read their name, because I know many of them are here. Some of them testified. Again, we have Terry Doyle, Chris Bilhart, Hannah Sanchez, Greg Stewart, Rod Underhill, Amy Hain with the District Attorney's Office, Carol Lehman with the State Department of Human Services, Rebecca Nichols with the Portland Women's Crisis Line, and Terry Lorenzen with Raphael House. So, again, thank you for your service.
So, as city, discussion?
I just have a couple of questions about the funding, the ongoing funding. I heard that the county is going to be taking care of the building maintenance, utilities, and such. And just could you talk to us a little bit about the staff funding and whether it's do we have ongoing money for this?
Yes, we do. We have about close to $500,000 in ongoing that pays for the center staff, including the executive director. And we'll also pay for the navigators. Those are people that will be hired from, they won't be hired. They'll work for nonprofit organizations, but they'll be paid to work at the center and help victims navigate the process.
I see. And then so we've got a $300,000 federal grant, which is great. What's that money going to be used for?
Well, we're going to either use it for additional operations, although it is finite, or we're also doing remodeling of the existing center. And that's about a $600,000 line item.
Thank you. And then I actually have a question for Commissioner Fish in response to the testimony we heard about the need for shelter and for ongoing housing for women. I know you've been working on that. Can you tell us some of the things that you've been doing on that?
Well, actually, that was the question that I was going to pose, and it could go to Dan or the executive director, but I'm looking at maybe if you could come forward just for a sec, because I'm looking at the partner spaces chart, and I'm just curious, because one of the most immediate needs of a victim, it might be emergency shelter or a voucher to get into a motel or longer-term housing, and where does that within the various categories, where does that service provided?
Well, the navigators will have the same access to those resources that other domestic violence advocates would in the community. We're not adding to those resources. Like, we're not using any of our budget to, you know, provide additional vouchers. But there's no reason to believe they wouldn't have, you know, the same access. It's a strained system. It's true. There are other mechanisms to supporting people into safe housing. For instance, some people might be really supported by getting a restraining order and having their landlord change the locks, which they're required to do when asked. But does everybody know that? Does everybody know how to assert that right? Again, another is the emergency monetary grants from the Department of Human Services. I think we're only one of seven states that take advantage of this program from the federal government that provides up to a $1,200 grant almost immediately, with the idea that that could cover a first and last month's rent deposit, that not having a nice bundle of money prevents people from renting separate spaces to live.
The short answer is yes, there will be access to shelter, access to vouchers at right. The center. The list you're looking at is not an exhaustive list of every service that will be available at the center.
So what in response to Amanda's question, if you would like someone from the Portland Housing Bureau to be either designated to the task force or to be the liaison person on those issues, please let me know.
I think that would be wonderful.
Yes, we'll
wonderful.
Take you up on that.
Okay. Yes, thank you.
All right, any other discussion? All right, we have four items to vote on. Carla, can you please call the roll for 1446?
Leonard?
I remember when Dan brought this originally before the council for the ongoing commitment and the one-time dollars and the concept, and it was challenging because we have a number of competing interests. And I was happy to support it then, but I gleefully support it now given the testimony we heard, but particularly from Rod Underhill. I think from my background, listening to what Rod said, he painted a picture that I think is important if if unpleasant, for people to understand why it is necessary to have this mechanism to draw all those resources together to protect the most vulnerable people we have in our society. So thank you, Dan, for this great work, and thank all of you for what you've done. Aye.
Fritz.
So in the past, others and I have wondered about why the city would pay for things that are traditionally considered county services. And the, in the past, we had Resolution A, which seemed to divide up which things the city paid for and which the county paid for. So I thought very hard about why I'm supporting this so enthusiastically. And I think there are three reasons. First of all, the need is there. The need is real. And to a certain extent, it doesn't matter who pays, which agency takes care of it, as long as somebody does, or some entity does. And what we have here is a partnership, and a very clearly spelled out partnership about who's doing what. And I greatly commend Commissioner Saltzman, Commissioner Kogan, and all of your staff for making it very clear who's going to do what the ongoing funding is, and that we are committed to this ongoing partnership. So to a certain extent, the development of the partnerships is way more important than Resolution A. Secondly, as Commissioner Leonard referred to Mr. Underhill's testimony, it's about crime. It's about crime prevention, and it's about housing, as Commissioner Fish has noted. Police and housing are definitely city responsibilities under Resolution A, and we should be taking care of those issues in the most cost-effective way, which is to try to address the needs early and help people get out of the situation where the crime becomes murder rather than a restraining order. So that's the very compelling issue as to why the city should take help with this project. And then the third is the issue of urban renewal, and we've had a lot of discussion about the city using money that would otherwise go to the county to make sure that we have vibrant urban renewal in blighted areas, which eventually adds to the property taxes, but certainly influences the county services right now. So it would be interesting at the end of the year, or the end of the fiscal year, to count up the amounts of money that comes from the county to the city and from the city to the county and see where we end up on that. Maybe just end up writing one check at the end instead of multiple different ordinances over the course of the year. But this is something that the city is stepping up and saying that, yes, we will dedicate some of our resources from the sources from the taxpayers that we have to making sure that this service is provided. So I think that's really important. I'm also very heartened by all of the partnerships. This is a human rights issue, and I'm glad that Paolo Catalani from the Office of Human Relations is here. There's a partnership in the ordinance for the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization with the Native American Youth and Family Services. This, again, like the Sunday Parkways, is looking at how can we add value to what the city and the county are doing to bring in multiple different partners so that we make sure we provide more and more services. And we're using volunteers. And thank you for your service. Thank you for the folks who stepped up. Portland Women's Crisis Line has done a fantastic job and continues to do a fantastic job. We also need to recognize that the center is but one step and that we don't have enough services for women and other domestic violence victims to provide that that immediate shelter and the ongoing shelter. That when we have the crisis line telling women and others that they need to ride the max all night to be safe, that's not a good solution. So we're going to be addressing that later today, talking about sidewalk management and services for people who need shelter. So we're both working in multiple ways to try to address the multiple needs of a metropolitan area of 2 million people. And I greatly appreciate Commissioner Saltzman's leadership on this and his willingness behind the scenes as well as in a formal occasion like this to work tirelessly on this project. And thank you to the mayor for your support and to my colleagues on the council for dedicating the funding for this. Aye.
Fish.
I want to begin by welcoming Martha Strawn Morris, the center director, and tell her what an outstanding presentation that was. And I have a particular interest in this because this was formerly known as the One-Stop Domestic Violence Service Center. And like Dan, I'm charged with creating a one-stop service center to deal with another challenge in our community, which is the one-stop center for the homeless, which we call the Resource Access Center. And at listening to this presentation, particularly the accountability piece and the oversight piece, frankly, has been very instructive to me as the housing commissioner, and I intend to borrow liberally from some of the things you've done. So welcome, and whatever the Portland Housing Bureau can do to make sure you are successful in your new charge, please let me know personally. Second, I want to just acknowledge two people who are here. One is Chris Bilhart, just for all the tremendous work that Chris does. And I have the honor of serving on the board of Volunteers for America, so I get regular reports about the work that she's doing with Home Free. And Chris, thank you for your service. It's outstanding. And I want to join with Amanda Fritz in acknowledging Rebecca Nichols. Before I was elected, I had the chance to serve as one of the attorneys for Portland Women's Crisis Line during a period of time. And as people in the community know, PWCL has had good days and bad days over the last 8 years. But I think it is no coincidence that its resurgence and its some of its greatest achievements have come with you at the helm. And I just think you are one of the finest executive directors of any nonprofit I've ever been associated with, Rebecca. So congratulations. Dan, this day would not be possible without your steadfast support and your dogged determination. One thing I learned when I got elected, if I've learned anything in the last year, it is something that Randy once told me, which is if you want to get something done in this form of government, you have to be relentless in pushing it through. And I think this is a testament to your persistent vision and leadership to bring us to this day. So I congratulate you. And I have learned over the years in many roles about the extent and depth and magnitude of this problem. And there are no easy answers, but the notion of a one-stop center where people receive all the services they need in a loving and safe setting with dignity is a great service to our community. So congratulations, and I'm very pleased to support your good work. Aye.
Saltzman.
I want to first of all acknowledge two people on the task force who I forgot to mention in the list, but Commissioner Jeff Kogan and also Chiquita Rollins, the Multnomah County Domestic Violence Coordinator, who could not be with us today, but they were also members of the task force. And I also want to thank my staff person, Shannon Callahan, and Jeff Kogan's staff person, Carol Collymore, who worked tirelessly. They, you know, we get all the credit, but it's the staff that does all the hard work behind the scenes. So they've done a lot of work, too. I think, you know, as Terry Doyle pointed out in her eloquent testimony, her conversations with women at the West Women's Shelter about how excited they are, how they look forward to the one-stop opening. You know, when you work in the field of domestic violence, you know, as I've witnessed from afar, I'm not in the field, but it can be pretty depressing work. There's not a lot of things that often are good news or encouraging. Budgets are strapped, agencies are scrambling for resources, there's not enough shelter beds. So it's really, to me, I'm proud to be here with a city council that supports something that is going to make a concrete difference in the lives of victims, a place where they can go to receive help and do it in an expeditious manner, often, as I said, with kids in tow. This, I think, is something that gives everybody in the community the time, as we all know, when everybody's strapped and domestic violence continues as ever to be a major phenomena crime in our city and county. This gives people who work in the trenches, as well as the victims, I believe, something to look up to, and to recognize, as I think again Terry said, that you know the community does care about everybody in the city, and victims of domestic violence deserve no less than what we're going to provide them with the one stop. So please to support this. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I think Commissioner Saltzman's roots as a county commissioner are showing in the most productive and compassionate way in his partnership with Commissioner Kogan and the entire county team, along with the private sector and the nonprofit partners on this. Persistence is a trait that Commissioner Saltzman has in spades, and I'm just incredibly pleased to be able to support his effort. This project embraces the fact that a life in crisis needs a single point, a single place to go, and that the bureaucracy and the public-private efforts need to surround that person so that they can survive and get out of these very difficult situations. I want to underscore my admiration for the survivors that have spoken today, and I'm very pleased to support this project. Aye. Can you please call the vote for 1447?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1447 is approved. Can you please call the vote for 1448?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1448 is approved. Can you please call the vote for 1449?
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
This is accepting the federal grant of $300,000. Again, I want to thank Congressman Earl Blumenauer for his leadership on this. Aye.
Adams?
Aye. 1449 is approved. Congratulations. That gets us to the regular agenda item, which I know we've got a lot of people waiting to testify on.
Mayor, we have two consent items that were pulled.
Usually we do that at the end of the regular agenda, don't we?
No, we usually do that
before
the regular.
Go ahead. Can you please read the first consent agenda item that was pulled?
Okay. 14.
Which one are you worried about, Mayor?
We have the sidewalk management plan today, and we have a number of people waiting. So,
come back.
Can you wait? Okay.
We work at your pleasure.
Okay.
Okay, good. I don't want to keep people waiting too long. So can you please read the title for regular agenda resolution, council calendar item 1464?
Approve the elements of a sidewalk management plan to balance the demands of multiple sidewalk users in a way that respects everyone's legal rights and makes downtown Portland the nation's best place to do business, work, live, and visit.
So this is an issue that touches every single member, every single portfolio of every single member of the City Council. And so we have adopted a team approach, a united approach, and a holistic approach. Between last time and today that this issue came before the City Council, much has happened. And two people on the City Council with fresh eyes have taken a look at our issues, at the issue, and I'd ask them to provide us with an update on their work. Then we'll get into more specifics of the resolution itself and then take public testimony. Commissioner Fish.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be very brief. The rules governing our downtown sidewalks have been a contentious and controversial issue for a long time. The SAFE framework, and SAFE stands for street
Access
for everyone, excuse me, embraced by business advocates and government, has had many positive features, including substantial public and private investment in homeless services. Every person in this room cares deeply about ending homelessness and making sure that downtown Portland is safe and welcoming place for all. I want to begin by just acknowledging the Safe Oversight Committee for their hard work and dedication. They include Mike Kuykendall, Monica Garacki, Carol McCreary, John Connors, Lori Abraham, Sean Subb, Owen Roncelli, Mike Reese, Mark Cholin, and Mark Hansen. Earlier this year, a Multnomah County court ruled that the current sit-lie ordinance is unconstitutional. And the judge ruled specifically that it was unconstitutional because it was preempted by state law. That's a fancy way of saying that there is a criminal statute that the judge identified, which is one tool that can be used to deal with obstruction, and that is a disorderly conduct statute, which is part of the criminal code of the state. And the court determined, after looking at case law and all the facts, that the city's attempt through sit-lie to use a civil tool to police the streets was preempted by state law, which required that a criminal statute be used instead. In any event, following the judge's ruling, and because of some ambiguity in the decision, the city asked for a rehearing for the chance to get some additional guidance. I had the pleasure of being in the courtroom with many of you here when the judge engaged in a somewhat unconventional two-hour colloquy with the attorneys before saying he had no jurisdiction to actually have that conversation. But in the course of that, the judge laid out some of the very complex legal issues. And without boring anyone, I will tell you that the issues range from rights protected under the federal constitution to rights protected under the state constitution to case law of issued by courts both in Oregon and across the country and by some other practical considerations. It became clear at the end of this legal process that the city needed to go back to the drawing board to find a new framework for moving forward on a lawful and comprehensive strategy for regulating our sidewalks. And when we talk about regulating our sidewalks, we are talking about finding the basic rules which govern the conduct of animate and inanimate objects. Sidewalks are places we find bus shelters, newsstands, and other fixed objects. They are also places where people engage in protected activity, protected speech activity, like demonstrations and solicitation. But they are also places where people get from point A to point B. Under the leadership of Mayor Adams, the council has been working as a team to try to come up with a comprehensive framework based on some very pragmatic and common sense principles for how we can regulate all the competing uses in the sidewalk. The intent is not to single out any group or to abridge anyone's rights. It is simply to figure out how we accommodate all kinds of uses in a very constrained space. Because of the complexity of the legal rules which apply, this is not an easy task, and I want to first thank the mayor for taking the leadership position on this and engaging the whole council in a solution. The resolution which we'll be discussing later contains the different elements of a comprehensive sidewalk management plan with assignments to each commissioner. But I will simply just, before I turn it over to Commissioner Fritz to talk about some of the public outreach that we've done, I just want to identify one common sense principle that we are trying to bring to this discussion. A user group that has the right to have their rights protected. And let's start with people that are disabled. Let's say a person in a wheelchair. Under the Americans with Disabilities Act, we have an obligation as a city to make sure that someone who is disabled can get access to a sidewalk, which means through a curb cut onto the sidewalk, access to a building, in and out, and mobility up and down the sidewalk. That means that we have to make sure there are no obstructions in any of those places that prevent someone who's disabled from having the same kind of access to downtown that someone who doesn't have a disability has. That, in principle, is something we can all agree to. How we actually provide the mechanism to regulate that under the law is more complicated. I believe under the mayor's leadership, we have found a path to do so. Today's resolution lays out what I would call the sort of roadmap and the path ahead. The next and perhaps harder task is to actually craft the ordinance and in consultation with all of our stakeholders. But I think we've made a promising first step. And I'll turn it over to Commissioner Fritz to talk a little bit about our public outreach process.
Good morning, and thank you all for being here. Earlier this year in the spring, we had a very contentious hearing on whether to extend the sidewalk obstructions law that was then in effect. And I, as the rookie, and Commissioner Fish as the fourth most senior member of the council, asked everybody to give us 6 months to talk about this and think about this. And many were skeptical. And we worked very hard over the summer. When I say we, I mean everybody in this room who's here to participate and everybody here on this council and many, many staff people. We organized two community forums. We had 70 people come to the Kaiser Town Hall on a 100-degree day in July, and then we had over 200 people pack into the First Unitarian Church for a conversation. And people talked and people listened to each other. And I thank everybody who participated in those conversations because I believe we are much further down the road to understanding each other, to understanding the issues, than we were back in the spring. And I recognize the work that's been done in the many years before this by the committees that have worked on it, by Sisters of the Road and other advocacy groups, to help look at what is the fair thing and what is the right thing to do on downtown sidewalks and to help people who need services. And I particularly want to recognize Mark Jolin of Join and Sisters of the Road Cafe and Resolutions Northwest, who were particularly important in bringing everybody together for those two community conversations. We put together a report. As it turned out, as Commissioner Fish said, the sidewalk obstructions law was found unconstitutional, and there was no question about whether we were going to renew that or not. So instead, we put together the report that we had promised, which is posted on my website, and it outlined a whole range of services and issues that need to be addressed as we move forward, and we are committed to doing that. Part of the resolution we're considering today is to find a permanent home in one of the council members' offices for an ongoing oversight committee made up of everybody who's in stakeholders from everyone who is needing to be engaged in this process, because it is a process. There isn't a single problem, therefore there isn't a single solution. So I greatly commend Mayor Adams for putting together an outline for a package of solutions. It's not at all that the council is doing to help address the range of issues. And I thank everybody who's been involved to this point. Thank you for participating today. I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback on the plan.
Thank you both for your excellent work on this issue. So this is, just want to underscore, resolution. As Commissioner Fish and Fritz pointed out, this is the roadmap. This does not implement anything. And part of the purpose of doing it in first phase of resolution is to continue to get public feedback. Just to provide a few more facts for those watching to consider, the city has 4,804 miles of streets and roads. We have 37,744 street corners. Just in downtown Portland, we have 152 miles of streets and roads. That is nearly the distance between where we sit today and Roseburg, including 1,778 street corners just in the west side of downtown alone. As Commissioner Fish pointed out, sidewalks have many competing uses, and we want to balance as best we can. Sidewalks can also range from 5 to 15 feet, so sidewalks are not uniform. And as also mentioned, there is a complex interlay of federal, state, county, city laws, court decisions on how sidewalks can or need to be managed and governed. There also is the issue that with the current economic recession, there have been some very brutal cuts at the state level and the county level to services that support people during these very difficult times. That's why this city council actually increased our funding, including $1 million ongoing, so that we could provide the services promised in the Resource Access Center. In fact, over the next 5 years, the Office of Management and Finance estimates that we will spend between city general fund dollars and Portland Development Commission dollars, that we will spend over the next 5 years $370 million on homeless and housing efforts. But still, there are at least 2,500 folks that are homeless. This is a very difficult issue, and we want to be as compassionate and effective and holistic about it as we possibly can. We'll now quickly walk through, and I'll have council make comments on items that they are responsible for. The first is that it's been identified that we have regulations intended to manage various aspects of the sidewalks scattered throughout the city's code. And that makes for a very difficult job on accountability, on management. And so number one in this resolution calls for the city attorney to return to the city council that pulls together all the elements in the city code intended to regulate sidewalk use. The second item relates to the police bureau, and it calls for a creation and regular update on a work plan to be improved by Commissioner Dan Saltzman, the commissioner in charge of the police bureau, to enforce laws prohibiting criminal behavior on sidewalks, including littering, harassment, disorderly conduct, and drug dealing. Anything you want to add?
I think we're going to have Commander Reese.
Commander Reese will speak to that.
Yeah.
The Police Bureau will also review current training programs and may propose possible additional training programs for the security guards under contract with the City of Portland who have the authority to patrol the public right-of-way. Number four deals with the Resource Access Center. Commissioner Fish, do you want to provide an update?
Just that you will all be receiving an invitation to come to the groundbreaking on November 20th. And we've got all of our ducks lined up. I shouldn't say that, given the history of this project. Something will now stall. But we will break ground on November 20th.
Number five, the resolution notes that there is that.